Six-Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And today we have John Hampton, technical architect from Agile Thought, and Jordan Rhodes, front-end software developer from Agile Thought.
Hey guys, thanks for having us.
John Hampton, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role with Agile Thought?
Yeah, hey guys, thanks for having us. So as a technical architect with Agile Thought, I'm in charge of software teams. Right now, I'm focused on full stack JavaScript. Front end frameworks we're focused on right now are React, React Native, and Electron. And we're full stack JavaScript focused primarily, so we are looking at Node on the server side.
All right, Jordan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I currently work at Agile Thought as a front end software developer. Focus on JavaScript, primarily working with React, as well as some other libraries to deliver client software. Occasionally, I get to venture over to the server side via Node.js, and that's what I'm doing now.
Excellent, excellent. So we've got a couple of JavaScript experts in the house.
Let us know when they get here.
sure. So with React, React Native, and Node, What do you guys like about those particular technologies, languages, frameworks?
Yeah, so for me, a big win from the React side, in my opinion, is React's philosophy of learn once, write anywhere. So that's basically once you learn React, you're good with React Native. You can also port that knowledge over to Electron if necessary. Electron's a nice desktop wrapper that you can plug React into. Another big win that we've been seeing on some recent projects is taking guys that are focused on Node and introducing them over to the front end. And if you know Node, jumping into React is pretty straightforward. We're using a lot of the same technologies. We're creating ES6 classes or just ES6 functions to present data. So it's been a nice transition for a lot of Node guys, and it's been a big win for us.
Great.
Yeah, it's funny. My experience is actually the opposite in that, you know, I started learning programming, went with JavaScript, was able to quickly get a job and make myself valuable on the front end. And with things like Node and React, I was able to, you know, apply those skills to different platforms, such as with React Native and Electron to get on the desktop and, you know, mobile devices. And then go back towards the server side with Node.js, you know, essentially all in one language, which is very beneficial.
Okay, great. And I guess how did you each get started in technology and in the roles that you're in now? How did you get to where you are?
So for me, I started programming a long time ago. I was probably third, fourth grade. My dad brought home a PC. I think it was an IBM 286 with a turbo button, something like that. And I started messing around with it and digging through how it worked from a software perspective, not a hardware perspective. That led me into messing around with QBasic languages like that. And I started writing like choose your own adventure games, just text-based choose your own adventure games. Fell in love with software way back then. And I've been a big fan ever since. Most of my professional career, I was focused on .NET and C#. And I always loved C# as a language, but once I started getting into JavaScript, I really found my passion. And that's just what I've been heads down focused on, trying to be the best at JavaScript and learning everything I possibly can since then.
For myself, I was, I guess, relatively late to the scene. I'm 29 years old now, and I started programming little under 2 years ago. Spent most of my adult life trying to figure out, you know, what I'm meant to do and I got nudged in the direction of programming by my brother-in-law, who's a pretty successful developer himself, and I just fell in love very quickly, and that's what I spent pretty much all of my time doing when I wasn't, you know, working to provide for my family. I was trying to get better, and, you know, I did everything from online courses to books to, you know, anything I could get my hands on. Started going to meetups, took an internship, and ended up here at Agile Thought.
Excellent, excellent. Now, John Hampton, you had mentioned you were a .NET guy, a C# guy. As you know, that Clayton and I are both, or historically have been C# and .NET guys, both working in JavaScript predominantly these days. How did you make that transition, and what was the big catalyst for that? Do you ever see yourself going back or at least utilizing those technologies in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question, John. So I am still a fan of C#. I've been digging into .NET Core a little bit. The metrics on .NET Core are looking very impressive. So I didn't necessarily move away from it completely. Just my preference is JavaScript these days, and the ability to quickly spin up APIs, spin up you know, front-end applications, pretty much anything, front to back. So that kind of stole my heart from that perspective. But what led me in this direction was, actually, I was messing around with ASP.NET and writing lots of jQuery. And I was getting really excited about what you could do with the DOM through jQuery, and this was quite a few years ago at this point. And that led me into the direction of actually exploring JavaScript as a language. I'd really just kind of messed around with it and used it to manipulate the DOM and make things flash or something, right? Grab some text out of an input, something like that. Once I started digging into it, I read JavaScript, The Good Parts. A lot of people have probably read that book. And that really opened my eyes at the power of this dynamic language, right? So from that point, I just dove in head first, and this was about the time that Angular was starting to pick up steam. So I started digging into Angular for some client needs, and really made owning Angular my focus. And then from Angular, all the things I started to like about it quickly turned into a lot of things that I disliked about it. So the more I moved into Node and pure vanilla ES6, the more that frameworks like React piqued my interest. So my approach now is to write as much ES6 as possible, you know, framework agnostic code using presentation layers, presentation frameworks where we have to, really just focused on Node and pure ES6. So,
all right. So, I'm familiar with Angular. I've been writing Angular apps for a couple of years. It's basically MVC on the browser. What is different about React, and what about that made you want to leave Angular?
So migrating from Angular to React was interesting. I was very deep in Angular. I was in the Angular 1.5 series, never really made it over to the Angular 2 or Angular 4. And everything that I really loved about Angular kind of turned into what I disliked about it. So coming from jQuery and ASP.NET, we were kind of building unstructured web applications. There are so many different ways to do everything. And then Angular came along and gave us a very structured way to build these apps. We had the concept of controllers and services and directives and building custom HTML and all of this good stuff. And it was a game changer. And really, I feel like it took the industry by storm. I think a lot of people felt that way. So there's a huge client need all of a sudden from ASP.NET to everybody has to learn Angular. Everybody wants to know Angular and needs Angular on their projects. So I loved all that structure that it gave me, and I also loved that it forced us into kind of, everything has to be Angularized, right? So from dependency injection to even pulling in third-party libraries like Lodash and things like that, there were certain ways that you would expose these libraries globally, kind of the Angular way, I'm air quoting. So I was really, really loved that approach, and I loved all of that stuff. I loved everything that it gave me. And then as I started building larger applications, I saw all of those, I saw really, really great ways to abuse all of those concepts. And you can do that with anything. I'm not picking on Angular at all. But once I saw React come about and libraries that gave you the ability, frameworks that gave you the ability to simply present data and then manage state however you want to, and kind of do things in more of a Node way versus an Angular way, that really got me focused on them. And React was obviously the biggest one, and still is one of the biggest ones of these libraries that allows you to just present data when you want. You can use things like Redux or MobX or other frameworks to manage your state. And you can write applications that are very focused on Node syntax, and learning Node is a great way to dig into React. React lets you do things however exactly how you want, right? So if you prefer to use Fetch to go grab data, or if you want to use some other library, it's completely up to you. And that was a big win from my perspective.
Okay, great. So Jordan, how did you said you were kind of nudged in the direction of programming and technology. What led you to JavaScript and choosing that direction?
Well, so at this point, I'd have to say what led me, I think I just got lucky. It was great timing. You know, 5 years ago, there wasn't really React and Angular and all this buzz. I mean, I'm sure it might have been in its infancy, but 2 years ago was, you know, the height of JavaScript before it started being called JavaScript fatigue. So it was almost like a no-brainer. You know, I started out learning Ruby and was making some progress there, but quickly it became apparent that JavaScript was the way to go. And I got lucky to have some, you know, some people in my life that I looked up to as mentors, not only in life, but also some, you know, I guess experienced developers that kind of guided me in that direction. And it was really helpful because, you know, there's a lot of resources out there and almost to the point where it's just too much. You know, you just get saturated and you don't know which way to go. I found myself going down plenty of rabbit holes with that guidance. What got me to JavaScript was just, I think it was a combination of timing and having the right people to listen to and to lead me.
Speaking of Angular and I did about a year and a half of Knockout, a year and a half of Angular 1.5, and 6 months of banging my head in frustration on Angular 2 and completely ignoring Angular 4 at this point. But, you know, how do you guys feel about, or have you given it much thought about how the Angular team chose to go about their next major release and subsequent releases?
So, I mean, there's definitely lots of positives that they're doing. I mean, Angular is a huge framework and it's used by a lot of folks. Angular also seems to kind of be advocating for TypeScript. So I think that might be one of the dividing lines, right? If you're more of a TypeScript guy, obviously you can use that with React. But TypeScript is more comfortable for guys coming from object-oriented languages like C#. It's a natural transition, and Angular, I think, is trying to piggyback on top of that. So I see that kind of dividing line in the industry. I know not everybody would agree with that, but that's at least what I've kind of felt. But they're both awesome frameworks. I see lots of comparisons. In my mind, they're really two different ways to tackle the same problem.
Yeah.
There's lots of frameworks you could choose. It's not React is the best. It's what's best for your need, right?
Yeah. So for those that are in React and looking to get into more React or just looking to expand their knowledge, what are your thoughts? You know, like you said, there's a lot of frameworks out there. There are a lot of third-party things or plugins and modules available. You know, Jordan, I think, had mentioned JavaScript fatigue.
Yeah.
But how do you decide which framework to choose, which module to utilize? I know we had before recording tonight, we had mentioned we were talking about Redux forms and
yeah.
You know, even so far as Flux and Redux. How do you choose a direction, Jordan? Where would you start?
Well, for me, I kind of tried everything to an extent. You know. I've never been one to just take your word for it or take someone's word for it, probably to a fault, right? But, you know, I did dabble in Angular enough to know I didn't want to ever look at it again.
Now, is that 1.5 or?
I believe so. I was working on I was converting a project. This is early, early in my, you know, paid developer career, where I was converting an Angular project to React. This was the client's choice, so I was exposed to both by their call. And I can tell you that the code that I ended up writing as a new developer in React, I liked that a lot more than the Angular code that was written by a developer that, you know, had a lot more experience than me, than as far as I knew. But really, it's just, you know, I like to dig into the code and just, if something is new, I take a look at it at least a little bit, you know, because there might be something really good in there, or it might be terrible, and at least I know for myself.
And as technical architect, John Hampton, do you have certain criteria that you look for when you're evaluating libraries and plugins and modules available, or how do you go about that?
Absolutely. So the current projects that we're building, we're using React. We evaluated Angular 2. We evaluated, obviously, React, and a few other, Aurelia, a few other, you know, widely known popular frameworks. Without kind of knowing ahead of time, the big win we get with Node, and kind of focusing on Node going into React, how we made the decision was based off the ecosystem, the community that was rallying behind React, and also, I mentioned this earlier, but also the ability to use React, and I know you can do this with other frameworks also, but the ability to use React to completely separate your state management, right? So you could do this with Angular 2 or anything else, but separating presentation from state management has given us lots of wins, so we can easily slap on new presentation layers using React Native or Electron. So all of that code we're writing in our state management layer, it doesn't matter what framework we're using, it could just be pure ES6. All of those are big wins from our perspective, so we can reuse that. So we had a lot of decisions going into that, and our choice for React was based off the ecosystem, the low barrier for entry as new developers came in. Angular 1x, we had a heck of a time getting people onboarded and learning some concepts. If you're new to JavaScript, some of the concepts that Angular 1x presented were difficult to learn for some guys. So React helped lower that barrier for entry and helped get people more productive earlier. So as an architect, that's what I'm focused on. You know, a developer's day, if they're happy to be working in what they're working and they're having a great day, that's a big win for us.
All right. I've heard both you, John Hampton, and Jordan mention a couple times Redux, and I've heard terms Flux and Jest and a whole bunch of other words that don't necessarily make sense to me when React comes up. Could somebody explain what those words are? Are they frameworks or libraries or patterns, or what are they?
I can certainly take a stab at that. So Flux is more of an idea or a kind of like a guideline for managing your state in a React application. This was brought to us by Facebook along with React. Especially for apps that you plan on scaling, you know, that are going to be pretty large. So, you know, it's just a prescription for managing your state and your data layer on the front end using React. It doesn't have to be React, but we won't get into that. Now, Redux is more of it is a library that you use to implement that Flux architecture. Say about a year and a half, 2 years ago, when Flux came out, there were all kinds of libraries, a new one popping up every day, if not several popping up every day. And it was kind of hard to rally around one that was it, right? So Redux comes along and it just kind of caught hold. I personally can't tell you why it won out against the others. I know that I do. I use it every day at work and I love it, but maybe John could speak some more of like why it took hold. But yeah, that would be the basic, you know, description of Redux from my perspective.
John, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think Jordan did a great job summing up. So what I like about Redux is more of the concept, right? So it's kind of, as Jordan mentioned, it's kind of a flavor of the Flux architecture. And so for us, as I mentioned earlier, our big win was separating state and presentation. And that's given us the ability to easily change our presentation layer. We're trying to be as framework agnostic as possible. So we're actually seeing what Redux has been doing and how the concepts underneath of Redux really aren't that complicated, but they give us a lot of nice functions to hook into that and to easily connect our state inside of our application to other areas that need it. So the concepts were more of the big win in our opinion. We're building a very large, a huge application actually using React and Redux, and we're starting to see that the Redux concepts are great, but as we scale out even larger, we may want to consider porting those into kind of our own Flux type architecture that works best for our needs. So Redux is a big win to sit on top of the Flux architecture, but we're starting to venture outside of that a little bit just to see what else we can do using custom eventing libraries and things like that.
And you had mentioned keeping presentation and logic separate. I follow Corey House on Twitter and LinkedIn and see a lot of his comments on React.
Yep.
You know, one of the ones that I like is his description of people bashing React a little bit about, you know, you're getting your JavaScript and your HTML mixed together.
Right.
I've heard people saying, oh no, it's we're just putting the HTML in the JavaScript and allowing it to handle that for us. What are your thoughts on truly separate HTML and JavaScript versus UI concepts?
So coming from the Angular world and the jQuery world and the ASP.NET world and all of those before, I was actually very uncomfortable when I first dove into JSX. The first thing I did when I built React was I used a library, forget what it was called, React Templates maybe. But the very first thing I did in building a React app was actually separating back out the HTML from the class that I was in, the component that I was building. So I know exactly what you mean. It felt very uncomfortable to me, and I started rallying behind all of the articles that were like, this JSX is ridiculous. What are these guys thinking, right? I jumped right on that bandwagon. But at one point, I was like, you know what? These guys are way smarter than I am, so I'm going to give it a chance. And now I absolutely love it. So JavaScript has been my go-to for everything. So if it's controlling the HTML, then, you know, more power to it, honestly, in my opinion at this point. I think that React has some interesting concepts behind the virtual DOM, and we're getting some other wins behind that. So it's really, there's not that much of a change. There's some tactical changes, keyword changes you have to be aware of, but you can still separate it if you really, really want to, right? Because all we're really doing is rendering, returning some JavaScript, some JSX. You can do that from pretty much anywhere. I don't know, Jordan, do you have anything else about that?
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting to hear a developer that has a lot of experience talk about their, you know, first time with React. Because for me, you know, again, I'm a newer programmer and I don't have a lot of experience with the MVC model or two-way data binding. So when I started learning React, I didn't have any bias against it. I was not biased against unidirectional data flow. I was not one of these, oh, my HTML has to be separate than my JavaScript. I just didn't know any better. So I took to it quite easily, I feel, you know, and I heard it explained pretty clearly early on from, I think it was Pete Hunt or one of the major contributors to React, who said, you know, the separating the HTML and the JavaScript is not separation of concern, it's separation of technologies, right? When in truth, most of the time you need to change a view. If your JavaScript is in one file and your HTML is in another, you're going to end up changing, you know, most of the time. There's always an exclusion to the rule, but most of the time you're going to end up changing something in both of those files. So why not put them together? It's not separation of concerns. So, you know, I took that and ran with it, and it made sense to me. I mean, I'm manipulating my HTML with my JavaScript. Let's do it all in one place.
Now, you had mentioned, Hampton, about separating your application into ways that you can deliver a different UI component or a different medium. How do you go about structuring an application for a web application or for a mobile application, or you know, how do you do that in a fashion that you can get maximum reuse?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done this a couple of different ways. One way, and I'm not sure which one, we haven't actually done this in a large application yet, so I'm not sure which one of these approaches would scale better. But right now we've tried a few different ways. So one is actually pulling out all of the state into a completely separate repository. And you could do the same thing if you just had a state directory, right? Same kind of concept. The cool part about putting it into its own repo is that you can add that as a dependency. You can link to that repo locally, making your developer experience just the same as if it was actually a directory inside of that project. And you can completely create your whole state layer as a completely separate thing that just has a nice API that exposes all of your functionality that you want your presentation layer to utilize. So, for example, if we have a common repository, maybe a state repository that all this logic lives, and you have a common layer for storage, right? So on the web, that storage might be using local storage or session storage. On your native device, assuming React Native, and probably be using async storage, something to that effect. You can have this common or state repository that would actually have abstraction layers on top of it. So when the web went to dispatch an action and potentially stored something, like a user profile, something to that effect, then our state repository, that abstraction layer, would be able to figure out if it was on web or mobile or desktop or what have you, and take the appropriate course of action. The other approach, as I mentioned earlier, was just to kind of have the state inside of the same repository. As far as presentation, that's kind of the easy part. We've gone directions of separate extensions like .iOS or .android or .web or .electron for the views, just so we have nice separation of those pieces. But on your presentation layer, whether you're web, mobile, Electron, when you click a button, the action that lives behind that button, the behavior that lives behind it, that code is 100% reusable. So you're not rebuilding any of that, which has been a big benefit, especially when you're building an application for a client. You can say, oh, well, we're only building new presentation. All that other stuff remains the same.
Now, I think you had mentioned, and it seems that Electron's getting a lot more press here lately. What are the differences, the similarities and differences between native and Electron, and when would you choose to go one versus the other?
So Electron really got my attention when we started building very complex web applications, right? So problems would come up such as, we have this very large web application, we need to start opening new tabs, we need to start taking advantage of some of the native functionality, the operating system, things like that. How do we do that, right? What are the complexities behind that on the web? Also, coding for other browsers, I say other, anything besides Chrome, right? Such as Edge or Internet Explorer. Unfortunately, that's still alive.
Are we getting back into browser wars?
We are. Is that not the podcast title, Browser Wars?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
What were the browser wars? I'm just kidding.
It was a movie. It was out in the 70s. Right. Return of the Browser. Anyway.
And we're going to get sued.
So once you start accounting for those complexities, at least in our world, and coding for Edge, especially Internet Explorer, right, having to support those guys, just the headaches never end, right? So Electron is a big win because it bundles up Node and Chromium, the open source part of Chrome, and you're only coding for Chrome, right? And you have the full Node API available to you, bundled up inside of your application, and you can build that for Windows or Mac OS or Linux. So it gives you more of that native feel that you're looking for, and you can interact directly with all of the, especially on macOS, all of the cool native functionality in anything that you could imagine, right? And the technology behind Electron is very slick, different processes managing all of this stuff, and it's very cool. So not necessarily the end-all answer for everything, right? But it's definitely an interesting technology to consider when you're building a complicated web application.
I just want to add, too, I don't have anything in production with Electron, but just the fact that, I can consider myself a web developer, an iOS and Android developer, and a desktop application developer, with JavaScript. And it's a real thing, I can say that because I, at least for the mobile and web, I've done that. Hopefully here soon I'll have a desktop Electron app going, but it's very powerful.
It's hard to ignore JavaScript as a powerhouse of a language at this point.
Right. And yeah, so like things like Node are getting more traction on server side.
Absolutely.
These days.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just maybe a year ago, they were talking about, there's still some hurdles to get past. There's some connectivity issues. There's some throughput issues. There were simultaneous connection issues that I think have been recently resolved. What are the biggest wins in the release schedule for Node so far that they've overcome, they've accomplished? What's left? What's the next big hurdle for Node on the server, for JavaScript on the server?
Yeah, so great question, John. So as of we're rolling with we stay on the Node LTS schedule.
LTS,
long term stable.
Okay.
So we follow that path, and we are inside of Node 6.10.2 right now. And you pretty much have all of the functionality that one would need when building a Node application. Some of the things that we're missing still at this point are nice syntactic sugar on top of require, like import and export. Async and await are still pieces that have not been fully released yet in the spec. So we are on the client. You can easily use Babel to add functionality like that. We haven't really dug into that on the server side. We're staying up to date with 6.10.2. And as soon as something becomes available, we grab a hold of it. But when you're writing Node, at least in our opinion, we're not trying to jump onto anything that is still a hypothetical at this point or may not actually make it into the final spec. We try to stay away from that stuff.
I mean, if I was going to add something, it'd just be that I can also write on the server, I mean, it's JavaScript everywhere and it's beautiful. It is, with Node, it is very performant for its use cases, right? You've got a single thread, non-blocking I/O. I'm sure you've heard all those buzzwords, but it's easy to understand. For me, it was easy to grab a hold of and run with it. And I can, I was able to throw up a server in 15 lines of code, and it worked.
And
first try.
Absolutely. And with companies like Netflix embracing Node, I mean, there's a lot of the performance concerns. I usually say look to what Netflix is doing, right, with those types of things. They handle a lot of throughput on the internet, and they're building on top of JavaScript. They have some cool tech blogs on Netflix. I think it's techblog.netflix.com. There's the JavaScript section, that has a lot of helpful information. And there's Node is definitely not the end-all answer for everything, right? There's always a need. I know that when people are building out domains, having a object-oriented language can be a big win from that perspective. So when we start talking about that, we get really excited about a true, not to use a buzzword, but a true microservices architecture where maybe we're using a framework or a toolkit like Seneca.js or something like that that would help support microservices architecture. And then we can still have .NET Core or Java or something like that running that gives us the ability to manage our domain. But Node is primarily the Node's facilitating all of that communication, which is pretty cool. So then you get the best of both worlds.
Right. So it's picking the right tool for the right problem, because I'm
sure
you can paint yourself into a corner pretty easily with any language doing something
absolutely
incorrectly or against recommended practices.
Yep, absolutely. And Node, I'm a huge, it has my heart. I'm a huge fan. I know Jordan is too. I know all of us are writing JavaScript these days. I love it, and it would be my answer for everything if it could be, but we have to consider what's right for the job, right?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the last decade or so, I've been primarily a Microsoft developer,
right?
C#, VB.net, and others that we just don't talk about anymore. But, you know, for the last few years, it was very much everyone needs to be a polyglot programmer and have a handful of languages in your bag that you can pull from any time. Yeah. You know, if there is one language that I would recommend for the newbies, for the guys coming up or just getting into it, it's got to be JavaScript.
Absolutely.
I have to second that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you've got a couple of old timers here in the room and on the podcast, and we've got a self-professed newbie to the industry that's you know kicking butt already with you know pretty much nothing but JavaScript under your belt at this point, right?
Yep. I think the at least for me, another reason I was getting frustrated with languages that force you into a platform, right, is that you're locked into that operating system and you really can't decide what your preferred tool is, right? So now that .NET has .NET Core and that's picking up steam, that's cross-platform and you can code on Mac OS inside of VS Code or what have you, right? So
Visual Studio for Mac.
Visual Studio for Mac. There you go. So it's definitely has attention now that and the comfort level that I get from the terminal and spinning up Node applications, you get a lot of that with .NET Core. But Node still has my heart. I would still pick that in a heartbeat, but the right tool for the job, right?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys have had much opportunity to poke around the six-figure developer blog, but for the most part, we try to write about things as they relate to technology and career and advancement and professionalism. So along those lines, do you have thoughts, suggestions? And Jordan, we'll start with you. Someone just starting out or just breaking into the field, you know, what has been the biggest benefit and the biggest help in starting this career? What advice would you have or what pitfalls would you tell people to look out for?
Yeah, so a couple of things come to mind. I think the most important for me was to find somebody that kind of like had what I wanted and just, you know, latch onto them. You know, I found a few people that were, you know, experienced developers, had a great job. I could tell they knew what they were doing. And, you know, I would run things by them. I'm the type of person that I would be up all night searching the web and looking for different tutorials and different blogs and articles. And at a certain point, you know, you get those diminishing returns. So having someone to tell me, you know, this is a good idea, this isn't, this is what you should be doing, and then also to bring things to my attention that I didn't even know, that definitely probably exponentially sped up my track. You know, I was able to go from literally hello world to a paid job in 9 months. And that just wouldn't have been possible without someone as a guide. And they're everywhere. There's people on Stack Overflow that'll openly tell you they'll help you if you ask a question. All the way down to, I know there's pair program with.me. That's a hard one to plug, but you can sign up for pair programming sessions with people all across the world and do live pair programming. That was really cool. I heard that on a podcast. So just getting out there and meetups too. That's how I ended up here at Agile Thought, was, you know, going to meetups, showing my face, meeting people, shaking hands, and just continuing to learn. You gotta love doing this too. That's because there were some tough nights, but, you know, I got through it.
Hampton, what about you?
Yeah, Jordan did a great job summing it up. I've been so deep in this for a long time, it's hard to step back and think about what I did to get started. But I had a similar experience to Jordan. I had, you know, guys at the first companies I worked with years and years ago that were super helpful and wanted to share their knowledge, right? So kind of having a mentor was a big help for me as well. It helps you get, you know, someone to talk to and, hey, how do I do this, right? Just sitting there and pairing with them was a big help. I think it's tough too when you're first coming into this industry to pick a path, right? Because you can go JavaScript, you can go object oriented, I mean, you can go Java, C sharp, and then jump over to the JavaScript world, and it is a completely different world. You can focus on functional programming and then try to jump into C sharp, and it might be, or Java, right? It might be a little bit of a different world. So I would say just kind of stay open minded. And just because you pick a path, a language to start with, doesn't mean that's your end all language, right? You can easily switch it up. And then a big piece of advice, or two pieces, I would say, stay hungry, because you have to, I've been doing this for a long time, I know you guys have been too, right? And we have to consistently be learning. Every night is learning. I code all the time at night to try to pick up new technologies and learn different languages, to your polyglot point, John. And then I would also say stay humble, right? Because you can get to a part where you think you know everything, and I promise you don't.
Getting into a technical architect role, is there any additional problems encountered in doing that? Is that a path you would recommend to others? Or are there, if you had it to do all over again, would you have made different choices?
No, it's interesting that you asked that. It is kind of a different path, right? I was a heads down developer for a long time, and I really enjoyed that role. And felt like I was excelling at it pretty well, and almost knew what I was doing. And moving into the architect role is a different world. So I'm not coding all the time like I was. I'm helping other people. I'm making decisions on architectural patterns, picking frameworks. There's a lot more eyes on your decisions, right? If I make a bad decision with a framework or push for a technical direction that doesn't play out, then that's back on me. And it's not as easy as just being a developer, where sometimes, at least in our world, some of those decisions are already in place. But no, I wouldn't change it. I love what I'm doing. I love the leadership role. I love helping people. I love people seeing that aha moment. And I love learning from other people. Every day I ask other developers who have different insights and different opinions to help me solve problems that I'm solving, just to get their input. And I use that in my decision making. So moving into this role has really taught me to listen to everybody that's around me, and it's helping us all grow as a team. So I love what I do every day. I love being at Agile Thought, and I wouldn't change it.
Excellent. So what's next for you guys? Is there, are you looking to the future already of next steps, next promotions, or just, happy where you are, continue learning and growing in the roles that you are, or are there other avenues that you wish to explore?
I don't know that I'll ever be fully satisfied. It's funny. I don't know how else to say this. I just got a promotion last week, and I maybe spent a day taking a breath and enjoying it, but I come here every day to learn more, and I want to grow. And I don't even know if I necessarily, want to be an architect or some type of delivery lead. I just want to be better than I was yesterday. And that is one of the most cliche things to say, but right now it's the truth.
I second everything Jordan just said. It kind of sounds cheesy. I don't think it does, but I literally wake up every morning and my goal is to be better today than I was yesterday, right? And it's learning a new technology, or learning from somebody else, or just learning in some way, right? Always, never stop learning, never stop growing. That's kind of my mantra. I don't want it for the foreseeable future. I'm happy with pretty much everything. I'm starting to explore more into Node. My goal is to own Node, and just be able to speak to every aspect of Node when people come and ask me questions about why is this the server-side technology that we want to go with. So that is my goal, is to really own that question and own that answer over the next few months.
So are there any projects that you guys are working on outside of work, or extracurricular activities, or what's the thing that has you most excited these days?
I'm a co-host of the React.js Tampa Bay, so check that out. We have a lot of cool stuff going on. So that has a lot of my time, a lot of my focus. And then also we are Jordan and I and a few other guys are focused on building a mobile application, actually mobile and Electron, that will, it's a nice little interface. It sits on top of Git clients, like GitHub or Bitbucket or VSTS, those types of things. And we're building that using a few Node microservices frameworks, just so we can speak to those a little bit better. So that really has my focus right now as a side project. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so in addition to the things that John said that I'm going to be working on as well...
that we just told you you're working on?
Well, you know, I'm just saying. So for me, the things that I'm working on outside of work, I'm looking to get into machine learning, right? So there's a new Alexa meetup in Tampa that just started. I couldn't name it off the top of my head, but it's in my calendar. And then... also, I feel like I've gotten to the point where it's time to try to maybe give back in a way, whether that's, I don't mean philanthropy, I mean like maybe help out with the meetup or some way to mentor people or show them, you know, the path I took. Because I got to tell you, 2 years ago, I did not think I'd be sitting here. And yeah, I want other people to know that it's possible.
I really like this, too. I'd like to be involved in more of these podcasts that you and Clayton do. You guys are doing a good job.
Well, thank you.
Welcome.
We appreciate any pandering we can get.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Tonight we've had John Hampton and Jordan Rhodes. Appreciate you guys coming out. Again, as always, this is the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Thank you.